Hello, and welcome to another episode of our podcast here at Star Legacy Foundation. My name is Lindsay Wimmer, and it's an honor to have you joining us. And I am so excited today to welcome David Corvey. David and his wife, Catherine, founded the Charles Martin Corvey Fund after their son was stillborn in 2021. He's recently published a book titled Dear Charlie, Letters to My Son, A Father's Journey of Loss, Grief, and Remembrance. So, David, thank you so much for all that you're doing in this space and for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Lindsay. I really appreciate the time and the space and being able to talk to you and talk about Charlie and spend some time with him today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's maybe start there. Can you tell us a little bit about Charlie's story?
Yeah, absolutely. My wife was 38 weeks pregnant in 2021. And Charlie was our third son. So we have two living boys. They were five and three at the time. They were completely healthy, normal pregnancies. And so when we found out about Charlie, it was so unexpected. Had no idea that anything like that was, was going to occur. Probably, which is very similar to a number of you out there. It was a Monday morning, and ironically, my wife had taken the day off because our boys were home as well, and so we had been doing some things. We had gone for a hike and everything, and my wife has always been very aware of when she's pregnant and like has always like monitored movement. And thankfully, her physicians, her doctors have told her about that. And so that afternoon, she was with our two boys, and they didn't feel him. They weren't feeling him, Charlie, move in her belly. And immediately, again, like I said, just very aware of her body and very attuned to everything that's going on. Immediately, she was like, something's wrong. Something was wrong. And gave herself a little bit more time. And before I knew it, she was standing at the door with bags and was going to drive herself to the hospital. And she's like, I called my OB. He told me to just come to L&D and come right in and everything. So I was like, I need to go with you because if you deliver, like we got the boys, like so she and I got in the car, and within the next hour or two, we were staring at the ultrasound image of him and his heart, and them telling us that his heart had stopped. And you those 24, 36 hours, or as I'm talking about this and sharing this, like they're just so vivid in your memory, in your mind. And so what ended up happening was that Charlie had a true knot in his umbilical cord. It was wrapped around his ankle several times as well, which isn't uncommon for the umbilical cord to be tangled or looped or anything like that. But just in the process of him growing, the knot had just cinched off at some point. That Monday. And so on October 26th, in 2021, Charlie was stillborn, here. And yeah, that kind of that that's in some where how we got Charlie, how Charlie's with us now. And very, very different from the two early pregnancies, just incredibly different from the two early pregnancies, and the labor and just the quiet and the silence of the hospital room. Yeah. But we're thankful to have Charlie here with us, and we're blessed to have him with us, and he watches out for us and takes care of us.
Love that. I love that. I love that you point out that those moments that you get With your baby, we, I mean, there you have an entire lifetime of memories to cram into a very short amount of time, and when you're in a very stressed state. So, but a lot of times I hear from parents over and over exactly what you said, that every moment is seared into your brain. Like it's very clear. Are there specific moments or things that you all did to just kind of be with Charlie that really stand out?
So it was hard for us because, we had our two boys were at home. We had dropped them off at a family member's house on our way to the hospital. My parents were scheduled to come up anyways for, for the delivery to help us with the boys. And so that afternoon, I called my mom, and I immediately, I mean, I remember again everything about that conversation with my mom and telling her that Charlie had passed. And so they immediately came up Monday night, got the boys. And so we had Charlie was born early Tuesday morning. And so we did have the whole day, the all of Tuesday to spend with him. But it was, again, it was pressing because we also had the boys at home and they didn't know yet, right? And so we, that's we can talk about that as well, like just in what we had to do and prepare to talk to them. But the time with Charlie, like that, we did. Again, and I know that everybody, is a lot of people are very similar with this, is like you try to just be with him and spend the time with him. And any baby you deliver, right? You have that time in the hospital room and you want that time with them, because even if you have living boy children already, then like as soon as you get home, like things take over and everything, and you try to give them that time. So we some of the things we did that day was, fortunately, our hospital had a cuddle cot. And so Charlie was able to stay in the room with us. He really didn't spend much time in the cuddle cot, though. I mean, I mean, people were holding him. My wife and I were holding him. My mother came that day. My dad was staying with our boys. My mom came and was with us that day. My wife's mother came over that evening as well. So, like, people were holding him. Were Catholic. My sister-in-law's twin brother is a Jesuit priest. We all were in high school together and had gone to high school together and everything. And so he's a close family member, and he came that morning and baptized Charlie and spent time with us as well. And he held Charlie. Again, I appreciate, because I know this isn't everybody's experience, and this is something that we're spreading awareness about and trying to help as well, as that, the hospital had a, they had a process, they had a service line in place that was very helpful. They had memory making and, his footprints and his handprints and, all of those pieces. They had resources for us to reach out to. We had, mental health providers come directly to our room, and also a big part of our experience was a child life specialist at hospitals, who really are the liaisons with children and helping children with their anxiety and nerves about it going to the hospital. They came in and they did their own memory making, and we had a musical therapist. I mean, there were so many things that were like incredibly supportive for us in that day and that time that we had with Charlie. And then another really big piece was, Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. Photographers came in. Our photographer was Marty Wagner. She was able to take pictures of Charlie that we have now. We've become close friends with her. So that was all very, very meaningful, and just how we were able to spend time with him.
That's amazing. So you mentioned talking to your living boys about what happened. That's such a poignant moment and something that no parent ever thinks about how you might approach. What, just kind of walk us through that a little bit and how you did try to, because then all of a sudden you're not only a grieving parent, but you're the parent of a grieving child simultaneously.
And and similarly, again, right, I know there's a number of parents out there who have a very similar experience, right? And again, there's no right or wrong way, or they're all different experiences. I mean, my heart goes out to parents who lose their first child, because that's a completely different experience as well, and everything, and the grief and the loss and the pain and everything that comes with that. And so, yeah, our dynamic, our personal dynamic was that we have our two boys, William and Alexander, who were 5 and 6 at the time. William was, I mean, both of them were, just smitten with my wife being pregnant and, everything. Our oldest, William, he's a very, very verbal, very intellectual guy, being the oldest, and like just really attuned with things. So he got hit the hardest, probably. Our Alexander, our 3-year-old, just again at his age, like kind of got it, didn't really get it in the moment. He's now 6 and he really gets it now. So I think that's something to say, is that they're, to your point, like they're grieving as well, and they will continue to grieve. And developmentally, as they get older, they'll experience it in different ways. And so we had a lot of support and help, like I said, from the hospital. The child life specialists in particular really helped us with what we have to say and do and talk about, and prepared us to help with that conversation when we got home. And some of and most of it is, pretty just, common sense, understandable, simple, like be concrete. Don't try to create these metaphors or these analogies or anything, because just developmentally, like kids, like aren't at that age, aren't going to understand. So just tell them, directly what happened. And don't give them too much information. More or less, just let them ask questions, and then just answer the questions as best as you can. And so we got home that evening, and like I said, my parents were here. My siblings had come up, so they were here. So the house was full of people, and my wife and I sat with our boys. They were just kind of playing, and it took them a minute. William, our oldest, it took him a minute. He was just like, "Where's the baby?" Because we left the day before, and we're like, my mom's gonna have the baby. So we had to, we just had to just tell him that the baby had died, and that his heart had stopped. And he was at the funeral home, and they were taking good care of him, and we were gonna go see him tomorrow morning. And we asked them, like, "Do you want to go see him?" And all of those things. William immediately started crying. It really hit him hard. Alexander is just the sweetest. Like, he noticed that William was crying, and he's like, consoling him. But yeah, just like I said, just trying to be like concrete. The next morning, I discussed this in one of our letters, of just like talking about telling your children. The next morning, William's still processing it. And he said, he's like, "So how did he die?" And we've talked to them about dying before, and it was just ironic and interesting and serendipitous that, like, William, the months leading up to Charlie's birth, William being 5 years old, had like started asking about dying, and again, which is completely normal and everything for a 5-year-old. And so, again, it's like, was he preparing us for this conversation? So something we have said, like, when you get older, or you die when your heart stops, or your body stops working, and those kinds of things. And I said that to him. I said, "Well," I started to say, "Well, his heart stopped beating," and he was like, "Don't tell me his heart stopped." Like he was like, "What happened?" Like, he really wanted to know what occurred.
It's pretty deep thinking. I'm impressed.
Oh, he is. He's a very intuitive and very, very intuitive guy. So I again, just the advice that was given was like, just be concrete. I'm an educator as well. I'm a teacher, and so like I also like understand, like I work visually as well. So I just took a piece of paper and I drew a circle, and I was like, this is mom's belly. I drew Charlie as a little stick figure in it, and I drew like his umbilical cord, and I just kind of visually laid it out for him. And we still have that image, and that image is in his is in the Dear Charlie book as well. But just being able to paint that image and be concrete for him was just super helpful. Alexander, on the other hand, our boys are in therapy, and they go to a grief camp, and they do those things where they can still be brothers to Charlie and still do things and everything and remember him. Our therapist one day came out and said that Alexander thought that Charlie had been hit by a truck, and that has how he had passed away. And she was like, I'm sure you had talked to him about this. And we're like, yeah. And she's like, okay, that's again, that's completely normal, understandable. And she's like, just keep talking to him about it and telling him about it. And now he gets it and he understands. And he is the he we call him, he's our 6-year-old. We call him the mayor. He will talk to anybody. And whenever we meet somebody new, or like he is hands down the first person that will be like, and there's Charlie, and Charlie died, and right, so
Yep.
he has it, we've really just normalized it for them, and feel like we've made it comfortable for them to just talk about him.
Yeah, I think that's great. So tell me about writing this book. What gave you the idea and prompted you to go that route?
Thanks for asking that. I was always a writer in like school and everything. Like again, like many other people, I have a novel or two written somewhere in a drawer, like just those aspirations that will never happen or anything. But what I have done is just I've always journaled and written everything, and I just have, I don't even know where this started, but I had the idea of writing letters to William and Alexander when my wife was pregnant with them, and I was going to write them letters. And I think I know that there are some parents who do this as well, but I was going to write them letters and then give them to at later dates, like at their high school graduation or something when they get older. And so I have letters for both William and Alexander, and then just as the busyness with having a couple kids and everything, just didn't ever write Charlie any letters when my wife was pregnant with him. And so it was probably around December, a couple months after Charlie had passed, and we're still navigating all of this, the loss and the grief and everything, and trying to kind of figure out how to navigate this. And my wife had said to me, she said, well, you didn't write Charlie any letters. Maybe that would be helpful for you. Because I also just I communicate and I articulate myself better through writing than I do talking about things. And so I just started writing letters to him just to kind of tell him about things that were happening and tell him about our life and tell him that we missed him and just tell him things that I was feeling and just in my grief and my sadness with this and my anger and like all the feelings and everything that I was just thinking of, just somewhere to like get it out. And it just felt good being able to communicate with him and talk with him. And so then over the next 6 months, I probably had at least one or two letters written a month. And it was that spring where I was like, oh, maybe this would be helpful for other people to hear, especially fathers and dads who've lost children. And so I just kept writing letters up to his first birthday, really. And I've written some since then as well, but really the book and the letters are everything that's within the year after he passed that just chronicle our life and just navigating our grief and everything. And so there's like a number of varying topics. There's a number of different feelings, and there's joy and sorrow and anger and frustration, and there's disbelief and denial. There's like all of those processes that just kind of form the messiness that is that is grief. So I still have those original letters, but then I was able to be introduced to a publishing company, a self-publishing company, and they took me through their entire editing process just to make them a little more public facing and everything. And again, they're still like, 90% of what the letters were, but just tightening up language and being clearer about things and articulating things better so that that people could read them. And yeah, so I just it that's the book that I ended up writing in my life. And it seems like, everything that I had done in terms of just writing and communicating and learning about that craft led to that point. So there's a lot of those Charlie moments and the serendipity and fate and all that kind of stuff playing in.
Absolutely. Well, and a couple of things that really, I think are really powerful about it are, like you said, the messiness. It's a very kind of raw in a way. I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but it's a very honest, maybe that's the better word. It's an honest look at how grief isn't it's not like you pick one way to grieve and that's how you're gonna go. Like it is a constant roller coaster. And I think that you do a really nice job of not trying to force that down, to be obvious in front of everybody, but just being very honest about how that is kind of part of that process. The other thing I like is that it helps us, gives us a little bit more insight into the dad perspective. Obviously, in the space, so much of the emphasis is on moms, and I, appropriately
Rightfully
so in
so,
many,
rightfully
many
so.
places, and I'm not, that's all wonderful. But we also, I love that we are starting to get things like this that really help broaden that conversation about understanding what it is that dads need and how this perspective is different, but it's that there's a lot of similarities there too, and how we don't have to ignore the dads just to support the moms. And I love that this contributes a lot to that conversation and hopefully kind of opens up, maybe makes people feel a little bit more comfortable talking to the men in their lives that may have had a similar experience, just kind of takes away some of the stigma or the silence that can surround it.
Are you seeing in your work with Star Legacy, are you seeing a lot of fathers wanting that and like kind of showing up for things? Are you seeing some shift there?
I think obviously, as you've mentioned, everybody responds differently. So it's a lot of it still comes down to their personality. But just having been at this for a couple of decades now, I've seen a little bit of some cultural shift just in terms of whether it's individual people being more comfortable and feeling better supported or being better able to advocate for themselves and say, I need, certain things or I need some help. We have a dad support group, and that has been, a very specific avenue that I've learned a lot about some of the dads and what is helpful to them. And again, that's the subset that finds that particular type of process beneficial. So but I think we are seeing, and actually in the research too, we're starting to actually see some of the researchers really put more energy into what this looks like and how we as health professionals can better support fathers through this whole process. And so I do think, over the time that I've been more aware of all of this process, I am seeing a broader conversation and less taboo associated with it, and a little bit more permission, if you will, for dads to speak up about what they need and how they lost a baby too.
Yeah, I think you're right in terms of just like a larger cultural shift that people are just the permission, right? Permission you said it, I think is big, right? Is that like feelings in general, right? Like any feelings, any tragedy, any trauma, anything like that, like I mean, you need to talk about it. That's part of the healing. That's part of the coping. And I think just culturally, and us as just, a larger kind of civilization, human race, like we're understanding that, and like we're giving people permission to talk about it, and we're learning ways to actually listen and hear these things that are happening, and not. And understanding that that's helpful, understanding that that's healthy and that's helpful, and also at the same time, to your point, finding your way, what works for you. I mean, as a man, as a father, like my initial response was fixer, problem solver, right? Like, focus on my wife. What does she need? Like, I just went into immediate, kind of go mode and just like, okay, these are the things that need to happen. These are the things that need to occur and everything. And you can easily, kind of forget that you need to process and navigate that as well. And so that was just something that I just appreciate about Catherine, my wife, that she recognizes that and knows that and like understands that and gives me the space to do that as well. And again, like like I said, I'm not like a huge verbal articulate communicator to her. I do a lot more of my communicating with her through writing. And today's her birthday. I'm actually looking at a I don't give her cards. I write her letters. So I'm looking at the letter that I gave to her this morning, and like I communicate more through written word and everything. But just understanding that, like, even if your husband or your father or your partner is not saying anything, just understanding that, like, they're thinking about it and they're having these feelings and everything, and it's just different, right? The process and the grief and everything is it just looks different for different people. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that this kind of demonstrate that this is one possible avenue for people. Writing probably isn't going to work for everybody, but neither, like you said, is talking, and neither is, whatever, kind of modality you pick. The important thing is to find what works for you.
Yeah, some people need to, you post on social media. Some people need to go for a run. Some people, I mean, my wife and I were also in therapy, so like that helped for us too. Like, I mean, and again, if what you need is to, I just know families and them who like, mom just needed to, she just needed to be in bed. Like, I mean, like those things, like, right? Like if. As long as you're, and people ask me this too, as I just talk more to people of, just as long as you're just communicating and talking with your support group around you of like what you need and what you don't need, I think that is hugely helpful. Yeah.
What kind of responses or feedback or just comments have you received from people about your book?
All pos I mean all positive. Yeah, I mean just one of the first responses, so I'm part of are you familiar with the books A Christmas Box? And then they have angel statues that are around everywhere. So we again just Charlie looking after us. We have an angel statue that is just 10 minutes from our house, and that we just found out about. And some friends of our kids that are in school together now, their dad is he's the director of the board and everything. So like now I'm on that committee with them and everything. And His first response when he got the book was, he's like, I couldn't even make it through the first page, like, because he had lost, they lost their first son. And, for him, that's what it was. I mean, other people have said, just how meaningful it is, how helpful it is to get one. I mean, what we're talking about is like to just get the father's perspective and like to kind of understand, but also just the tribute to Charlie and like his legacy and those things, and just being vulnerable and putting that out there. And I've also met, just in through work and just again just in conversations, people who've told me like, oh, my sibling died at birth 60 years ago, right? Like, and it's like a person recently that I was working with just in my job, had told me that. And she said, her mother, who's 80 something now, just still talks about it and everything. So I like just ran out to my car and I was like, give this to your mom. Like, here, give this book to your mom and everything. And so I think it's also like, we're a community of people and like we thrive on connection and everything. And so I think that's like a big piece, is that just it's connection to people and it's letting people know that they're not alone. But yeah, I mean, the response for anybody who has gotten the book, it's just been, very thankful and just very positive. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Are there any, maybe this is a little bit like picking your favorite child, but
Oh,
are there any letters that really stand out as like one of your favorites or one that really just kind of encapsulates a major message that you appreciate?
yeah, no, that's a funny, good question. I mean, there's several, and they right, and if you haven't read it, and as I alluded to before, that it covers like a variety of topics, and Lindsay, like you read it, and so it talks about, again, just kind of my experience, like it, they go through his birth story and everything, and then we actually talk about his funeral, and then we there's a whole letter that's specifically for like telling the story of what I told earlier of like how we told William and Alexander. There's a whole letter in there, which is probably one of my favorite letters, is I tell Charlie the story of how Catherine and I met, because that's like a that's like a family story. You always kind of know, I know how my grandparents met, I know how my parents met, our boys know how we met, they've been to the college where we met at. But Charlie would he never heard the story of how his mother and I met, so that's a, and there's, again, there's just so many emotions that are tied through it. There's happy moments and there's sad moments and there's anger and there's joy. And I think it's just a testament to, again, there's no one right or wrong way. There's a letter in there about my, I would probably have to say that could be my favorite letter. There's a letter about my grandfather, who Charlie and I are both named after, and that gets into a lot of what you and I were talking about with just how over time, we've gotten permission and we've been, it's been okay to like grieve and show our feelings, especially for men. And my grandfather was, like a man's man, two generations ago, and was just like tough as nails, and but later in life, showed emotion that, I know he probably had felt but never, been able to express before or anything. And it was, and I was there seeing it, and witnessing it, when I was 15. And so I tell Charlie about him, and I talk about my grandfather with him, and tell Charlie that we're both named after him. I'm David Martin, and you're Charles Martin. your grandfather was Martin Luki. So, and then I mean, then just getting there's a very short letter at the end where we have a for everybody, we have a rainbow baby now. We were fortunate and able to have another child after Charlie. So I get to tell Charlie that, like, your brother was born, and every letter usually ends with like appreciation of Charlie, just because there's things that are happening in our life that are very, like I said, are just very serendipitous of these Charlie moments and things that he's looking after us. And so just so you get to tell him that, his little brother was born and he's okay. Like he's good, he's safe, he's okay, So I get I have a lot of feelings when I read over the letters. Yeah.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
That was a good question. That was a nice question.
So one of my favorite questions I always ask parents is, what advice do you give, or what would you say to a parent that is just beginning their grief journey?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear that, I mean, the hardest part for me, second to losing Charlie was watching my wife, watching Catherine, what she physically, emotionally, just everything went through and still goes through, right? Charlie would he's almost he'd be almost 4 years old now, and this is still with us. And so along those lines, I think it would be just giving yourself grace, giving yourself like the time, the space, the compassion, because again, right, we said, like, rightfully so, the birthing parent, the mother takes the brunt of it, right? My wife has the physical trauma of delivering Charlie, in addition to just the emotional trauma and everything that comes with being his mother. And at the same time, you go through those. You go through that. We still go through them. We see you go through those, just like what if scenarios. I mean, I know Catherine feels a level of guilt. Had lost faith in her body. I mean, right? And it's like you're gonna experience those things, and the same thing as the father. Like it's like did I do something? Did I not do something? Right? And so I think it's hard. But what I would say is just give yourself grace and give yourself the space and the time to grieve and to process. And we started Charlie's Fund. We started the Charles Martin Corby Fund because that was like our big thing, was we had all of that. We had all of that support. We had the family and clergy and healthcare. Like we had all that support, and just fortunately, luckily, things they that process went well for us, and we had the space and time to grieve. We know that that's not the case for everybody. And so Charlie's Fund, what it does is it seeks to help organizations like Star Legacy, who are doing this amazing work and providing the service for families who are grieving, to just offset some of those burdens, whether it's financial, whether it's remembrance, whether it's grief, just trying to help families get the space and the time to grieve and process this loss.
I love that. Yeah. So one last question, just because working in this area and certainly, taking time out of your day to do things like this, or working with your fund and all those things, it can be really heavy work. And a lot of times people from the outside will say, wouldn't it just be easier to to kind of try to move on and not continually intentionally insert yourself into that space? But when I talk to parents, and I've certainly felt this myself, there's actually so much hope and inspiration and positive energy that comes from working with this. And like you said very early on, kind of spending that time with your son. So what is it that you find encouraging or positive about being in this space that keeps you coming back and being part of it rather than trying to push it off to the side as quick as you can?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good question, and that's, I mean, and you're right, because you probably have the experience as well, is that, like, and there are organizations who are trying to make people aware of this, of like things you don't say to a parent who just lost, right? Like, I was recently asked. I did another talk for a group of healthcare providers in our Cleveland, Ohio area, and somebody asked me a similar question. Her question, one of the providers, was, how do you do this? She was like, how do you get up and talk about this? And I guess anybody who's wondering that, or to your point of like, oh, wouldn't it just be easier? My response and my answer was, I talk, Charlie's our, he's our, he's our child. Like, you talk about your kids. As a parent, you talk about your kids. You talk about them going to school. You talk about what they're going to eat. You talk about diapers. I mean, you talk about the things that they're experiencing. So for me, it's just talking about my child. It's just talking about Charlie. And I don't see it any other way. The same as I talk about William and Alexander and Louis is our rainbow baby, our 2-year-old now. Like, we talk about them, we include them, they're part of our family. I think that, and when we do that, like, on a mental health side, right, it's helpful. It's healthy. It's positive to do. And I'm with you too, right? I think there's still just a stigma of, or vulnerability, or that worry of like, oh, if I talk about it, then it's going to be a problem. But it's not a problem. When you talk about it, it's helpful. I mean, you and I have experienced, like, oh, in just in the short time that we've chatted, we've laughed, we've gotten pretty quiet and solemn. I mean, I have definitely felt anger. When I talk about his umbilical cord, I always feel angry, especially when medical professionals are still telling me that there's 4 years later that there's nothing they can do. They can't do anything with the umbilical. They can't see the umbilical cord. They can't monitor it. I get really angry about that. Yeah, I mean, just like to your point, just giving the permission to like talk and feel about these things, like, and it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay, and it will be okay. I just think, yeah, we still have a lot of work to do as a culture, society, to be able to like be okay with talking about these things. And just because you're talking about it doesn't mean you're not sad, doesn't mean it's not okay, doesn't mean it didn't happen. I mean, like, all of those things. Like, you don't have to agree with it. I don't agree with it. But I can talk about it and share, and then keep things moving.
And I think it's just acknowledging that it's is there. Ignoring it doesn't make it go away. And so acknowledging it sometimes, almost even diffuses some of the power that that negativity can have over us.
100%. You are absolutely right, Lindsay. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, very cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here and for all that you're doing in this space to help other people as well. I encourage everyone to check out his book, Dear Charlie, Letters to My Son, A Father's Journey of Loss, Grief, and Remembrance. And just thank you so much for everything that you're doing, and happy birthday to Catherine from all of us at Star Legacy, and I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Lindsay. This was again, a nice way to spend time with you and with Charlie. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Take care.